Chapter 46, Uddhava Visits Vrindavan. Shukadev Goswami said, "The supremely intelligent Uddhava was the best counselor of the Vrishni dynasty, a beloved friend of Lord Sri Krishna, and a direct disciple of Brihaspati. The Supreme Lord Hari, who relieves the distress of all who surrender to him, once took the hand of his fully devoted, dearmost friend Uddhava and addressed him as follows. Dear gentle Uddhava, go to Braja and give pleasure to our parents, and also relieve the gopis suffering in separation from me by giving them my message. The minds of those gopis are always absorbed in me, and their very lives are ever devoted to me. For my sake, they have abandoned everything related to their bodies, renouncing ordinary happiness in this life, as well as religious duties necessary for such happiness in the next life. I alone am their dearmost beloved, and indeed their very self. Therefore, I take it upon myself to sustain them in all circumstances. My dear Uddhava, for those women of Gokula, I am the most cherished object of love. Thus, when they remember me, who am so far away, they are overwhelmed by the anxiety of separation. Simply because I have promised to return to them, my fully devoted cowherd girlfriends struggle to maintain their lives somehow or other." Shukadev Goswami said, "Thus addressed, O King, Uddhava respectfully accepted his master's message, mounted his chariot, and set off for Nanda Gokula. The fortunate Uddhava reached Nanda Maharaj's pastures just as the sun was setting, and since the returning cows and other animals were raising dust with their hooves, his chariot passed unnoticed. Gokula resounded on all sides with the sounds of bulls in rut fighting with one another for fertile cows, with the mooing of cows burdened by their udders chasing after their calves, with the noise of milking and of the white calves jumping here and there, with the loud reverberation of flute playing, and with the singing of the all auspicious deeds of Krishna and Balaram by the cowherd men and women, who made the village resplendent with their wonderfully ornamented attire. The cowherds' homes in Gokula appeared most charming with their abundant paraphernalia for worship of the sacrificial fire, the sun, unexpected guests, the cows, the Brahmins, the forefathers, and the demigods. On all sides lay the flowering forest, echoing with flocks of birds and swarms of bees, and beautified by its lakes crowded with swans, Karandava ducks, and bowers of lotuses. As soon as Uddhava arrived at Nanda Maharaja's home, Nanda came forward to meet him. The cowherd king embraced him in great happiness and worshipped him as none different from Lord Vasudev. After Uddhava had eaten first-class food, been seated comfortably on a bed, and been relieved of his fatigue by a foot massage and other means, Nanda inquired from him as follows. "My dear most fortunate one, does the son of Shura fare well, now that he is free and has rejoined his children and other relatives? Fortunately, because of his own sins, the sinful Kamsa has been killed, along with all his brothers. He always hated the saintly and righteous Yadus. Does Krishna remember us? Does he remember his mother and his friends and well-wishers? Does he remember the cowherds and their village of Braja, of which he is the master? Does he remember the cows, Vrindavan Forest, and Govardhan Hill? Will Govinda return even once to see his family? If he ever does, we may then glance upon his beautiful face with its beautiful eyes, nose, and smile. We were saved from the forest fire, the wind and rain, the bull and serpent demons, from all such insurmountable deadly dangers by that very great soul, Krishna. As we remember the wonderful deeds Krishna performed, his playful sidelong glances, his smiles, and his words, O Uddhava, we forget all our material engagements. When we see the places where Mukunda enjoyed his sporting pastimes, the rivers, hills, and forests he decorated with his feet, our minds become totally absorbed in him. In my opinion, Krishna and Balaram must be two exalted demigods who have come to this planet to fulfill some great mission of the demigods. Such was foretold by Garga Rishi. After all, Krishna and Balaram killed Kansa, who was as strong as 10,000 elephants, as well as the restless Chanura and Mushtika, and the elephant Kuvalya Pida. They killed them all sportingly, as easily as a lion disposes of small animals. With the ease of a royal elephant breaking a stick, Krishna broke a powerful giant bow 270 feet long. He also held a mountain aloft for 7 days with just one hand. Here in Vrindavan, Krishna and Balaram easily destroyed demons like Pralamba, Dhenuka, Arishta, Trinavarta, and Baka, who had themselves defeated both demigods and other demons. Shukadev Goswami said, "Thus intensely remembering Krishna again and again, Nanda Maharaj, his mind completely attached to the Lord, felt extreme anxiety and fell silent, overcome by the strength of his love." As Mother Yashoda heard the descriptions of her son's activities, she poured out her tears and milk flowed from her breasts out of love. Uddhava then joyfully addressed Nanda Maharaj, having clearly seen the supreme loving attraction he and Yashoda felt for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. "O respectful Nanda, certainly you and Mother Yashoda are the most praiseworthy persons in the entire world, since you have developed such a loving attitude toward Lord Narayan, the spiritual master of all living beings. These two lords, Mukunda and Balaram, are each the seed and womb of the universe, the creator and his creative potency. They enter the hearts of living beings and control their conditioned awareness. They are the prime evil supreme. Anyone, even a person in an impure state, who absorbs his mind in him for just a moment at the time of death, burns up all traces of sinful reactions and immediately attains the supreme transcendental destination in a pure spiritual form as effulgent as the sun. You two have rendered exceptional loving service to him, Lord Narayan, the supersoul of all and the cause of all existence, the great soul who, although the original cause of everything, has a human-like form. What pious deeds could still be required of you? Infallible Krishna, the Lord of the devotees, will soon return to Braja to satisfy his parents. Having killed Kamsa, the enemy of all the Yadus in the wrestling arena, Krishna will now surely fulfill his promise to you by coming back. O most fortunate ones, do not lament. You will see Krishna again very soon. He is present in the hearts of all living beings, just as fire lies dormant in wood. For him, no one is especially dear or despicable, superior or inferior, and yet he is not indifferent to anyone. He is free from all desire for respect, and yet gives respect to all others. He has no mother, no father, no wife, children, or other relatives. No one is related to him, and yet no one is a stranger to him. He has no material body and no birth. He has no work to do in this world that would oblige him to take birth in pure, impure, or mixed species of life. Yet, to enjoy his pastimes and deliver his saintly devotees, he manifests himself. Although beyond the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the transcendental Lord accepts association with them as his play. Thus, the unborn Supreme Lord utilizes the material modes to create, maintain, and destroy. Just as a person who is whirling around perceives the ground to be turning, so one who is affected by false ego thinks himself the doer, when actually only his mind is acting. The Supreme Lord Hari is certainly not your son alone. Rather, being the Lord, he is the son, soul, father, and mother of everyone. Nothing can be said to exist independent of Lord Achyuta. Nothing heard or seen, nothing in the past, present, or future, nothing moving or unmoving, great or small. He indeed is everything, for he is the Supreme Soul. While Krishna's messenger continued speaking with Nanda, the night ended, O King. The women of the cowherd village rose from bed and, lighting lamps, worshipped their household deities. Then they began churning the yogurt into butter. As they pulled on the churning ropes with their bangled arms, the women of Braja shone with the splendor of their jewels, which reflected the lamp's light. Their hips, breasts, and necklaces moved about, and their faces, anointed with reddish kumkum, glowed radiantly with the luster of their earrings reflecting from their cheeks. As the ladies of Braja loudly sang the glories of lotus-eyed Krishna, their songs blended with the sound of their churning, ascended to the sky, and dissipated all inauspiciousness in every direction. When the godly sun had risen, the people of Braja noticed the golden chariot in front of Nanda Maharaja's doorway. "Who does this belong to?" they asked. "Perhaps Akrura has returned, he who fulfilled Kamsa's desire by taking lotus-eyed Krishna to Mathura. Is he going to use our flesh to offer funeral oblations for his master, who was so satisfied with his service?" As the women were speaking in this way, Uddhava appeared, having finished his early morning duties. Chapter 47, The Song of the Bee. Shukadev Goswami said, "The young women of Braja became astonished upon seeing Lord Krishna's servant, who had long arms, whose eyes resembled a newly grown lotus, who wore a yellow garment and a lotus garland, and whose lotus-like face glowed with brightly polished earrings. 'Who is this handsome man?' the gopis asked. 'Where has he come from, and whom does he serve? He's wearing Krishna's clothes and ornaments.'" Saying this, the gopis eagerly crowded around Uddhava, whose shelter was the lotus feet of Lord Uttama Shloka, Sri Krishna. Bowing their heads in humility, the gopis duly honored Uddhava with their shy, smiling glances and pleasing words. They took him to a quiet place, seated him comfortably, and began to question him, for they recognized him to be a messenger from Krishna, the master of the goddess of fortune. The gopi said, "We know that you are the personal servant of Krishna, the chief of the Yadus, and that you have come here on the order of your good master, who desires to give pleasure to his parents. We see nothing else he might consider worth remembering in these cow pastures of Braja. Indeed, the bonds of affection for one's family members are difficult to break, even for a sage. The friendship shown toward others, those who are not family members, is motivated by personal interest, and thus it is a pretense that lasts only until one's purpose is fulfilled. Such friendship is just like the interest men take in women or bees in flowers. Prostitutes abandon a penniless man, subjects an incompetent king, students their teacher once they have finished their education, and priests a man who has remunerated them for a sacrifice. Birds abandon a tree when its fruits are gone, guests a house after they have eaten, animals a forest that has burnt down, and a lover the woman he has enjoyed, even though she remains attached to him." Thus speaking, the gopis, whose words, bodies, and minds were fully dedicated to Lord Govinda, put aside all their regular work now that Krishna's messenger, Sri Uddhava, had arrived among them. Constantly remembering the activities their beloved Krishna had performed in his childhood and youth, they sang about them and cried without shame. One of the gopis, while meditating on her previous association with Krishna, saw a honeybee before her and imagined it to be a messenger sent by her beloved. Thus she spoke as follows.
Gopya huvacho Modabakitava bandho maspashangrim sapatna kucha vilulita mala kunkamash mashubhino vahutu modabatistan manini nam prasadam yodasadasivadam yam yasidutastamidri sakadadadasudam swamohinim pahyayitva sumanasa ivasanyas tatyajis manbhavadri Padachatatikatam tat pada padmam upadma yapi batavita cheta yuttama shloka jalpai Kimaya bahashadangri gayasi tam madunam adipatam agrahanam agato nakpuranam Vijaya sakasakinam kiyatam tat prasangha chapatakuchu jasti kalpayantishnamishta Api padam adupuyam ayu putra nunasti smadati se pitrge han somya banhum shugopan kochidapi sakata nak kinkari nam guniti
Pujamogudusugandham, Mudnidasyat Kadanu, Pujamogudusugandham, Mudnidasyat Kadanu. The gopi said, "Oh, honeybee, oh friend of a cheater, don't touch my feet with your whiskers, which are smeared with the kumkum that rubbed onto Krishna's garland when it was crushed by the breasts of a rival lover. Let Krishna satisfy the women of Mathura. One who sends a messenger like you will certainly be ridiculed in the Yadu's assembly. After making us drink the enchanting nectar of his lips only once, Krishna suddenly abandoned us, just as you might quickly abandon some flowers. How is it then that goddess Padma willingly serves his lotus feet? Alas, the answer must certainly be that her mind has been stolen away by his deceitful words. Oh, bee, why do you sing here so much about the Lord of the Yadus in front of us homeless people? These topics are old news to us. Better you sing about that friend of Arjuna in front of his new girlfriends, the burning desire in whose breast he has now relieved. Those ladies will surely give you the charity you are begging. In heaven, on earth, or in the subterranean sphere, what women are unavailable to him? He simply arches his eyebrows and smiles with deceptive charm, and they all become his. The Supreme Goddess herself worships the dust of his feet, so what is our position in comparison? But at least those who are wretched can chant his name, Uttama Shloka. Keep your head off my feet. I know what you're doing. You expertly learn diplomacy from Mukunda, and now you come as his messenger with flattering words. But he abandoned those who for his sake alone gave up their children, husbands, and all other relations. He's simply ungrateful. Why should I make up with him now? Like a hunter, he coolly shot the king of the monkeys with arrows. Because he was conquered by a woman, he disfigured another woman who came to him with lusty desires. And even after consuming the gifts of Bali Maharaj, he bound him up with ropes as if he were a crow. So let us give up all friendship with this dark-complexioned boy, even if we can't give up talking about him. To hear about the pastimes that Krishna regularly performs is nectar for the ears. For those who relish just a single drop of that nectar, even once, their dedication to material duality is ruined. Many such persons have suddenly given up their wretched homes and families, and themselves becoming wretched, travel here to Vrindavan to wander about like birds, begging for their living. Faithfully taking his deceitful words as true, we are just like the black deer's foolish wives who trust the cruel hunter's song. Thus we have repeatedly felt the sharp pain of lust caused by the touch of his nails. O messenger, please talk about something besides Krishna. O friend of my dear one, has my beloved sent you here again? I should honor you, friend, so please choose whatever boon you wish. But why have you come back here to take us to him, whose conjugal love is so difficult to give up? After all, gentle bee, his consort is the goddess Shri, and she is always with him, staying upon his chest. O Uddhava, it is indeed regrettable that Krishna resides in Mathura. Does he remember his father's household affairs and his friends, the cowherd boys? O great soul, does he ever talk about us, his maidservants? When will he lay on our heads his aguru-scented hand? Shukadev Goswami said, "Having heard this, Uddhava then tried to pacify the gopis, who were most eager to see Lord Krishna. He thus began relating to them the message of their beloved. Sri Uddhava said, 'Certainly you gopis are all successful and are universally worshipped because you have dedicated your minds in this way to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. Devotional service unto Lord Krishna is attained by charity, strict vows, austerities, and fire sacrifices, by japa, study of Vedic texts, observance of regulative principles, and indeed by the performance of many other auspicious practices. By your great fortune, you have established an unexcelled standard of pure devotion for the Lord, Uttama Shloka, a standard even the sages can hardly attain. By your great fortune, you have left your sons, husbands, bodily comforts, relatives, and homes in favor of the supreme male, who is known as Krishna. You have rightfully claimed the privilege of unalloyed love for the transcendental Lord, O most glorious gopis. Indeed, by exhibiting your love for Krishna in separation from him, you have shown me great mercy. My good ladies, now please hear your beloved's message, which I, the confidential servant of my master, have come here to bring you. The Supreme Lord said, "You are never actually separated from me, for I am the soul of all creation. Just as the elements of nature, ether, air, fire, water, and earth, are present in every created thing, so I am present within everyone's mind, life air, and senses, and also within the physical elements and the modes of material nature. By myself, I create, sustain, and withdraw myself within myself by the power of my personal energy, which comprises the material elements, the senses, and the modes of nature. Being composed of pure consciousness or knowledge, the soul is distinct from everything material and uninvolved in the entanglements of the modes of nature. We can perceive the soul through the three functions of material nature known as wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep. As a person just arisen from sleep may continue to meditate on a dream even though it is illusory, so by the agency of the mind, one meditates on the sense objects, which the senses can then obtain. Therefore, one should become fully alert and bring the mind under control. According to intelligent authorities, this is the ultimate conclusion of all the Vedas, as well as all practice of yoga, sankhya, renunciation, austerity, sense control, and truthfulness, just as the sea is the ultimate destination of all rivers. But the actual reason why I, the beloved object of your sight, have stayed far away from you is that I wanted to intensify your meditation upon me and thus draw your minds closer to me. When her lover is far away, a woman thinks of him more than when he is present before her. Because your minds are totally absorbed in me and free from all other engagement, you remember me always, and so you will very soon have me again in your presence. Although some gopis had to remain in the cowherd village and so could not join the rasa dance to sport with me at night in the forest, they were nonetheless fortunate. Indeed, they attained me by thinking of my potent pastimes." Shukadeva Goswami said, "The women of Braja were pleased to hear this message from their dearmost Krishna. His words having revived their memory, they addressed Uddhava as follows." The gopis said, "It is very good that Kamsa, the enemy and persecutor of the Yadus, has now been killed, along with his followers. And it is also very good that Lord Achyuta is living happily in the company of his well-wishing friends and relatives, whose every desire is now fulfilled. Gentle Uddhava, is the elder brother of Gada now bestowing upon the city women the pleasure that actually belongs to us? We suppose those ladies worshipped him with generous glances full of affectionate, shy smiles. Sri Krishna is expert in all kinds of conjugal affairs and is the darling of the city women. How can he not become entangled now that he's constantly adored by their enchanting words and gestures? O saintly one, does Govinda ever remember us during his conversations with the city women? Does he ever mention us village girls as he freely talks with them? Does he recall those nights in Vrindavan forest, lovely with lotus, jasmine, and the bright moon? As we glorified his charming pastimes, he enjoyed with us, his beloved girlfriends, in the circle of the rasa dance, which resounded with the music of ankle bells. Will that descendant of the Sharha return here and by the touch of his limbs bring back to life those who are now burning with the grief he himself has caused? Will he save us in that way, just as Lord Indra brings a forest back to life with his water-bearing clouds? But why should Krishna come here after winning a kingdom, killing his enemies, and marrying the daughters of kings? He's satisfied there, surrounded by all his friends and well-wishers. The great soul, Krishna, is the lord of the goddess of fortune, and he automatically achieves whatever he desires. How can we forest dwellers or any other women fulfill his purposes when he is already fulfilled within himself? Indeed, the greatest happiness is to renounce all desires, as even the prostitute Pingala has declared. Yet even though we know this, we cannot give up our hopes of attaining Krishna. Who can bear to give up intimate talks with Lord Uttama Shloka? Although he shows no interest in her, goddess tree never moves from her place on his chest. Dear Uddhava, when Krishna was here in the company of Sankarshan, he enjoyed all these rivers, hills, forests, cows, and flute sounds. All these remind us constantly of Nanda's son. Indeed, because we see Krishna's footprints, which are marked with divine symbols, we can never forget him. O Uddhava, how can we forget him when our hearts have been stolen away by the charming way he walks, his generous smile and playful glances, and his honey-like words? O Master of the Goddess of Fortune, O Master of Braja, O Destroyer of all suffering, Govinda, please lift your Gokula out of the ocean of distress in which it is submerged. Shukadev Goswami continued, Lord Krishna's messages having relieved their fever of separation, the gopis then worshipped Uddhava, recognizing him as non-different from their Lord, Krishna. Uddhava remained there for several months, dispelling the gopis' sorrow by chanting the topics of Lord Krishna's pastimes. Thus he brought joy to all the people of Gokula. All the days that Uddhava dwelled in Nanda's cowherd village seemed like a single moment to the residents of Braja, for Uddhava was always discussing Krishna. That servant of Lord Hari, seeing the rivers, forests, mountains, valleys, and flowering trees of Braja, enjoyed inspiring the inhabitants of Vrindavan by reminding them of Lord Krishna. Thus, seeing how the gopis were always disturbed because of their total absorption in Krishna, Uddhava was supremely pleased. Desiring to offer them all respect, he sang as follows.
Etak param tanu beto bhavigo pavanvo govinda evanakalatma nirudha bhava vanchanti yanbhava bhiyomana yovayancha kim brahma janma vidinantaka tarasasya gve mastriyo vanatadi vyabhichari dushta krishne kuchaisha padamatma nirudha bhava Nan Vishro Nubajato Vidushopi Sakshat Jayastano Chagadaraj Hivopi Yukta Nayang Shiyong Unitan Tadati Prasara Swayoshitang Nalina Gandadu Chankutonya Rasotsavi Sabujadan Gahita Kanda Ramda Shishang Udagad Vajavallabhina
Among all persons on earth, these cowherd women alone have actually perfected their embodied lives, for they have achieved the perfection of unalloyed love for Lord Govinda. Their pure love is hankered after by those who fear material existence, by great sages, and by ourselves as well. For one who has tasted the narrations of the infinite Lord, what is the use of taking birth as a high-class Brahman, or even as Lord Brahma himself? How amazing it is that these simple women who wander about the forest, seemingly spoiled by improper behavior, have achieved the perfection of unalloyed love for Krishna, the Supreme Soul. Still, it is true that the Supreme Lord himself awards his blessings even to an ignorant worshiper, just as the best medicine works even when taken by a person ignorant of its ingredients. When Lord Sri Krishna was dancing with the gopis in the Ras Lila, the gopis were embraced by the arms of the Lord. This transcendental favor was never bestowed upon the goddess of fortune or other consorts in the spiritual world. Indeed, never was such a thing even imagined by the most beautiful girls in the heavenly planets, whose bodily luster and aroma resemble the lotus flower. And what to speak of worldly women who are very beautiful according to material estimation? The gopis of Vrindavan have given up the association of their husbands, sons, and other family members, who are very difficult to give up, and they have forsaken the path of chastity to take shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, Krishna, which one should search for by Vedic knowledge. Oh, let me be fortunate enough to be one of the bushes, creepers, or herbs in Vrindavan, because the gopis trample them and bless them with the dust of their lotus feet. The goddess of fortune herself, along with Lord Brahma and all the other demigods, who are masters of yogic perfection, can worship the lotus feet of Krishna only within their minds. But during the rasa dance, Lord Krishna placed his feet upon these gopis' breasts, and by embracing those feet, the gopis gave up all distress. I repeatedly offer my respects to the dust from the feet of the women of Nanda Maharaj's cowherd village. When these gopis loudly chant the glories of Sri Krishna, the vibration purifies the three worlds. Shukadev Goswami said, Uddhava, the descendant of Dasharatha, then took permission to leave from the gopis and from Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. He bade farewell to all the cowherd men and, about to depart, mounted his chariot. As Uddhava was about to leave, Nanda and the others approached him bearing various items of worship. With tears in their eyes, they addressed him as follows. May our mental functions always take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. May our words always chant his names. And may our bodies always bow down to him and serve him. Wherever we are made to wander about this world by the Supreme Lord's will, in accordance with the reactions to our fruit of work, may our good works and charity always grant us love for Lord Krishna. Shukadev Goswami continued, O ruler of men, Parikshit, thus honored by the cowherd men with expressions of devotion for Lord Krishna, Uddhava went back to the city of Mathura, which was under Krishna's protection. After falling down to pay his homage, Uddhava described to Lord Krishna the immense devotion of the residents of Braja. Uddhava also described it to Vasudev, Lord Balaram, and King Ugrasen, and presented to them the gifts of tribute he had brought with him. Chapter 48, Krishna Pleases His Devotees. Shukadev Goswami said, Next, after assimilating Uddhava's report, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the omniscient soul of all that be, desired to satisfy the serving girl Trivakra, who was troubled by lust. Thus, he went to her house. Trivakra's home was opulently appointed with expensive furnishings and replete with sensual accoutrements meant to inspire sexual desire. There were banners, rows of strung pearls, canopies, fine beds and sitting places, and also fragrant incense, oil lamps, flower garlands, and aromatic sandalwood paste. When Trivakra saw Krishna arriving at her house, she at once rose from her seat in a flurry. Coming forward graciously with her girlfriends, she respectfully greeted Lord Achyuta by offering him an excellent seat and other articles of worship. Uddhava also received a seat of honor, since he was a saintly person, but he simply touched it and sat on the floor. Then Lord Krishna, imitating the manners of human society, quickly made himself comfortable on an opulent bed. Trivakra prepared herself by bathing, anointing her body, and dressing in fine garments, by putting on jewelry, garlands, and perfume, and also by chewing betel nut, drinking fragrant liquor, and so on. She then approached Lord Madhava with shy, playful smiles and coquettish glances. Calling forward his beloved, who was anxious and shy at the prospect of this new contact, the Lord pulled her by her bangled hands onto the bed. Thus he enjoyed with that beautiful girl, whose only trace of piety was her having offered ointment to the Lord. Simply by smelling the fragrance of Krishna's lotus feet, Trivakra cleansed away the burning lust Cupid had aroused in her breasts, chest, and eyes. With her two arms, she embraced between her breasts her lover, Sri Krishna, the personification of bliss, and thus she gave up her long-standing distress. Having thus gotten the hard-to-get Supreme Lord by the simple act of offering him body ointment, unfortunate Trivakra submitted to that Lord of Freedom the following request. O beloved, please stay here with me for a few days more and enjoy. I cannot bear to give up your association, O lotus-eyed one. Promising her the fulfillment of this lusty desire, the considerate Lord Krishna, Lord of all beings, paid Trivakra his respects and then returned with Uddhava to his own supremely opulent residence. Lord Vishnu, the supreme Lord of all lords, is ordinarily difficult to approach. One who has properly worshipped him and then chooses the benediction of mundane sense gratification is certainly of poor intelligence, for he is satisfied with an insignificant result. Then Lord Krishna, wanting to have some things done, went to Akura's house with Balaram and Uddhava. The Lord also desired to please Akura. Akura stood up in great joy when he saw them, his own relatives and the greatest of exalted personalities, coming from a distance. After embracing them and greeting them, Akura bowed down to Krishna and Balaram and was greeted by them in return. Then, when his guests had taken their seats, he worshipped them in accordance with scriptural rules. O King, Akura bathed the feet of Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram and then poured the bath water on his head. He presented them with gifts of fine clothing, aromatic sandalwood paste, flower garlands, and excellent jewelry. After thus worshipping the two lords, he bowed his head to the floor. He then began to massage Lord Krishna's feet, placing them on his lap, and with his head bowed in humility, he addressed Krishna and Balaram as follows. Akura said, "It is our good fortune that you two lords have killed the evil Kamsa and his followers, thus delivering your dynasty from endless suffering and causing it to flourish. You both are the original Supreme Person, the cause of the universe and its very substance. Not the slightest subtle cause or manifest product of creation exists apart from you. O Supreme Absolute Truth, with your personal energies you create this universe and then enter into it. Thus one can perceive you in many different forms by hearing from authorities and by direct experience. Just as the primary elements, earth and so on, manifest themselves in abundant variety among all the species of mobile and immobile life, so you, the one independent supreme soul, appear to be manifold among the variegated objects of your creation. You create, destroy, and also maintain this universe with your personal energies, the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness. Yet you are never entangled by these modes or the activities they generate. Since you are the original source of all knowledge, what could ever cause you to be bound by illusion? Since it has never been demonstrated that you are covered by material bodily designations, it must be concluded that for you, there is neither birth in a literal sense nor any duality. Therefore, you never undergo bondage or liberation, and if you appear to, it is only because of your desire that we see you in that way, or simply because of our lack of discrimination. You originally enunciated the ancient religious path of the Vedas for the benefit of the whole universe. Whenever that path becomes obstructed by wicked persons following the path of atheism, you assume one of your incarnations, which are all in the transcendental mode of goodness. You are that very same Supreme Person, my Lord, and you have now appeared in the home of Vasudev with your plenary portion. You have done this to relieve the earth's burden by killing hundreds of armies led by kings who are expansions of the demigods' enemies, and also to spread the fame of our dynasty. Today, O Lord, my home has become most fortunate because you have entered it. As the Supreme Truth, you embody the forefathers, ordinary creatures, human beings, and demigods, and the water that has washed your feet purifies the three worlds. Indeed, O Transcendent One, you are the spiritual master of the universe. What learned person would approach anyone but you for shelter when you are the affectionate, grateful, and truthful well-wisher of your devotees? To those who worship you in sincere friendship, you reward everything they desire, even your own self, yet you never increase or diminish. It is by our great fortune, Janardan, that you are now visible to us, for even the masters of yoga and the foremost demigods can achieve this goal only with great difficulty. Please quickly cut the ropes of our illusory attachment for children, wife, wealth, influential friends, home, and body. All such attachment is simply the effect of your illusory material energy." Shukadeva Goswami continued, "Thus worshipped and fully glorified by his devotee, the Supreme Lord Hari smilingly addressed Akura, completely charming him with his words. The Supreme Lord said, You are our spiritual master, paternal uncle, and praiseworthy friend. And we are like your sons, always dependent on your protection, sustenance, and compassion. Exalted souls like you are the true objects of service and the most worshipable authorities for those who desire the highest good in life. Demigods are generally concerned with their own interests, but saintly devotees never are. No one can deny that there are holy places with sacred rivers, or that the demigods appear in deity forms made of earth and stone. But these purify the soul only after a long time, whereas saintly persons purify just by being seen. You are indeed the best of our friends, so please go to Hastinapur, and as the well-wisher of the Pandavas, find out how they are doing. We have heard that when their father passed away, the young Pandavas were brought with their anguished mother to the capital city by King Dhritarashtra, and that they are now living there. Indeed, weak-minded Dhritarashtra, the son of Ambika, has come under the control of his wicked sons, and therefore that blind king is not treating his brother's sons fairly. Go and see whether Dhritarashtra is acting properly or not. When we find out, we will make the necessary arrangements to help our dear friends. Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus fully instructing Akrura, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Hari, then returned to his residence, accompanied by Lord Sankarshan and Uddhava. Chapter 49, Akrura's Mission in Hastinapur. Shukadeva Goswami said, Akrura went to Hastinapur, a city distinguished by the glory of the Paurava rulers. There he saw Dhritarashtra, Bhishma, Vidura, and Kunti, along with Balika and his son Somadatta. He also saw Dronacharya, Kripacharya, Karna, Duryodhana, Ashwatthama, the Pandavas, and other close friends. After Akrura, the son of Gandini, had appropriately greeted all his relatives and friends, they asked him for news of their family members, and he in turn asked them about their welfare. He remained in Hastinapur for several months to scrutinize the conduct of the weak-willed king, who had bad sons and who was inclined to give in to the whims of mischievous advisors. Kunti and Vidura described to Akrura in detail the evil intentions of Dhritarashtra's sons, who could not tolerate the great qualities of Kunti's sons, such as their powerful influence, military skill, physical strength, bravery, and humility, or the intense affection the citizens had for them. Kunti and Vidura also told Akrura about how the sons of Dhritarashtra had tried to poison the Pandavas and carry out other such plots. Kunti Devi, taking advantage of her brother Akrura's visit, approached him confidentially. While remembering her birthplace, she spoke with tears in her eyes. O gentle one, do my parents, brothers, sisters, nephews, family, women, and girlhood friends still remember us? Does my nephew Krishna, the Supreme Personality and the compassionate shelter of his devotees, still remember his aunt's sons? And does lotus-eyed Rama remember them also? Now that I am suffering in the midst of my enemies like a doe in the midst of wolves, will Krishna come to console me and my fatherless sons with his words? Krishna, Krishna, O great yogi, O supreme soul and protector of the universe, O Govinda, please protect me who have surrendered unto you. I and my sons are being overwhelmed by trouble. For persons fearful of death and rebirth, I see no shelter other than your liberating lotus feet, for you are the Supreme Lord. I offer my obeisances unto you, Krishna, the Supreme Pure, the Absolute Truth, and the Supersoul, the Lord of pure devotional service and the source of all knowledge. I have come to you for shelter. Shukadeva Goswami said, thus meditating on her family members and also on Krishna, the Lord of the universe, your great-grandmother, Kunti Devi, began to cry in grief, O King. Both Akrura, who shared Queen Kunti's distress and happiness, and the illustrious Vidura consoled the Queen by reminding her of the extraordinary way her sons had taken birth. The ardent affection King Dhritarashtra felt for his sons had made him act unjustly toward the Pandavas. Just before leaving, Akur approached the king, who was seated among his friends and supporters, and related to him the message that his relatives, Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram, had sent out of friendship. Akrura said, O my dear son of Vichitravirya, O enhancer of the Kuru's glory, your brother Pandu having passed away, you have now assumed the royal throne. By religiously protecting the earth, delighting your subjects with your noble character, and treating all your relatives equally, you will surely achieve success and glory. If you act otherwise, however, people will condemn you in this world, and in the next life you will enter the darkness of hell. Remain equally disposed, therefore, toward Pandu's sons and your own. In this world, no one has any permanent relationship with anyone else, O King. We cannot stay forever even with our own body, what to speak of our wife, children, and the rest. Every creature is born alone and dies alone, and alone one experiences the just rewards of his good and evil deeds. In the guise of dear dependents, strangers steal the sinfully acquired wealth of a foolish man, just as the offspring of a fish drink up the water that sustains the fish. A fool indulges in sin to maintain his life, wealth, and children and other relatives, for he thinks, these things are mine. In the end, however, these very things all abandon him, leaving him frustrated. Abandoned by his so-called dependents, ignorant of the actual goal of life, indifferent to his real duty, and having failed to fulfill his purposes, the foolish soul enters the blindness of hell, taking his sinful reactions with him. Therefore, O King, looking upon this world as a dream, a magician's illusion, or a flight of fancy, please control your mind with intelligence and become equipoised and peaceful, my lord.